Maya met Bat's eyes. He was staring. She realized she'd forgotten to tell him about Maureen's crush on Simon. She'd have to catch him up later, if there was a later. The vampires behind Maureen were looking more than a little hungry.
"I asked you to come meet me so that we could form an alliance," Maya said, as gently as if she were trying not to spook an animal.
"I love alliances," said Maureen, and she hopped down from the top of the boxes.
Somewhere she'd gotten hold of an enormous lollipop, the kind with multicolored swirls. She began to peel off the wrapping.
"If we form an alliance, we can be part of the invasion."
"The invasion?" Maya raised her eyebrows.
"Sebastian's going to invade Idris," Maureen said, dropping the plastic wrap. "He'll fight them, and he'll win, and then we'll divide up the world, all of us, and he'll give us all the people we want to eat."
She bit down on the lollipop and made a face.
"Ugh, nasty."
She spit out the candy, but it had already painted her lips red and blue.
"I see," Maya said.
"In that case, absolutely. Let us ally against the Shadowhunters." She felt Bat tense at her side.
"Maya."
Maya ignored him, stepping forward. She offered her wrist.
"Blood binds an alliance," she said.
"So say the old laws.
Drink my blood to seal our compact."
"Maya, no," Bat said. She shot him a quelling look.
"This is how it has to be done," Maya said.
Maureen was grinning. She tossed aside the candy. It shattered on the floor.
"Oh, fun," she said, "like blood sisters."
"Just like that," said Maya, bracing herself as the younger girl took hold of her arm.
Maureen's small fingers interlaced with hers. They were cold and sticky with sugar. There was a click as Maureen's fang teeth snapped out.
"Just like..."
Maureen's teeth sank into Maya's wrist. She was making no effort to be gentle. Pain lanced up Maya's arm and she gasped. The walls behind her stirred uneasily. She could hear Bat breathing hard with the effort not to lunge at Maureen and tear her away. Maureen swallowed, smiling, her teeth still firmly seated in Maya's arm. The blood vessels in Maya's arm throbbed with pain. She met Lily's eyes over Maureen's head. Lily smiled coldly. Maureen gagged suddenly and pulled away. She put a hand to her mouth. Her lips were swelling, like someone who'd had an allergic reaction to bee stings.
"Hurts," she said.
And then fissuring cracks spread out from her mouth across her face. Her body spasmed.
"Mama,"
she whispered in a small voice as she began to crumble. Her hair drifted to ashes and then her skin, peeling away to show the bones underneath. Maya stepped back, her wrist throbbing as Maureen's dress folded away to the ground, pink and sparkling and empty.
"Holy, what happened?" Bat demanded and caught Maya as she stumbled.
Her torn wrist was already beginning to heal, but she felt a little dizzy. The wolf pack was murmuring around her. More disturbing, the vampires had come together, whispering, their pale faces venomous, full of hate.
"What did you do?" demanded one of them, a blonde boy in a shrill voice. "What did you do to our leader?"
Maya stared at Lily. The other girl's expression was cool and blank. For the first time, Maya felt a thread of panic unfurl beneath her ribcage. "Lily."
"Holy water," said Lily. "In her veins. She put it there with a syringe earlier, so Maureen would be poisoned with it."
The blonde vampire bared his teeth, his fangs snapping into place.
"Betrayal has consequences," he said. "Werewolves..."
"Stop," Lily said. "She did it because I asked her to." Maya exhaled, almost surprised by the relief that hit her. Lily was looking around at the other vampires who were staring at her in confusion.
"Sebastian Morgenstern is our enemy, as he is the enemy of all downworlders," Lily said. "If he destroys the Shadowhunters, the next thing he will do is turn his attention on us. His army of Andarkan warriors would murder Raphael and then lay waste to all the Knight's children. Maureen would never have seen that. She would have driven us all to our destruction."
Maya shook out her wrist and turned to the pack. "Lily and I agreed," she said. "This was the only way. The alliance between us, that was sincere. Now is our chance. When Sebastian's armies are at their smallest and the Shadowhunters are still powerful,
Now is the time we can make a difference. Now is the time we can avenge those who died at the Praetor.
Who's going to lead us? Whined the blonde vampire.
The one who kills the previous leader takes up the mantle of leadership, but we can't be led by a werewolf.
He glanced at Maya. No offense.
None taken, she muttered.
I am the one who killed Maureen, said Lily. Maya was the weapon I wielded, but it was my plan, my hand behind it. I will lead, unless anyone objects. The vampires glanced around at one another in confusion.
Bat, to Maya's surprise and amusement, cracked his knuckles loudly in the silence. Lily's red lips curved.
I didn't think so.
She took a step toward Maya, daintily avoiding the tall dress and pile of ashes that were all that was left of Maureen.
Now, she said, why don't we discuss this alliance?
I did not make a pie, Alec announced when Jason Clary returned to the large central chamber of the cave. He was lying on his back on an unrolled blanket, with his head pillowed on a wadded-up jacket. There was a fire smoking in the pit, the flames casting elongated shadows against the walls. He had spread out provisions, bread and chocolate, nuts and granola bars, water and bruised apples. Clary felt her stomach tighten, realizing only then how hungry she was. There were three plastic bottles next to the food, two of water and a darker one of wine.
I did not make a pie, Alec repeated, gesturing expressively with one hand. For three reasons. One, because I do not have any pie ingredients. Two, because I don't actually know how to make a pie.
He paused, clearly waiting. Removing his sword and leaning it against the cave wall, Jay said warily,
And three?
Because I am not your bitch, Alec said, clearly pleased with himself. Clary couldn't help but smile. She undid her weapons belt and laid it down carefully by the wall. Jace, unbuckling his own, rolled his eyes.
You know that wine is supposed to be for antiseptic purposes, Jace said, sprawling elegantly on the ground next to Alec.
Clary sat beside him. Every muscle in her body protested. Even months of training hadn't prepared her for the day's draining trek across the burning sand.
There's not enough alcohol in wine to be able to use it for antiseptic purposes, said Alec.
Besides, I'm not drunk, I'm contemplative.
Right.
Jace swiped an apple, sliced it expertly in two, and offered half to Clary. She took a bite of the fruit, remembering. Their first kiss had tasted of apples.
So, she said, what are you contemplating?
What's going on at home? Alec said.
Now that they've probably noticed we're gone and all that.
I feel bad about Talene and Helen. I would have liked to warn them.
You don't feel bad about your parents? Clary said.
No, Alec said after a long pause. They had their chance to do the right thing.
He rolled onto his side and looked at them. His eyes were very blue in the firelight.
I always thought being a shadow hunter meant that I had to approve of what the Clave did, he said. I thought otherwise I wasn't loyal. I made excuses for them, I always have. But I feel like whenever we have to fight, we're fighting a war on two fronts. We fight the enemy and we fight the Clave too. I just don't know how I feel anymore.
Jace smiled at him fondly across the fire.
Rebel, he said.
Alec made a face and levered himself up onto his elbows.
Don't make fun of me, he snapped, with enough force that Jace looked surprised.
Jace's expressions were unreadable to most people, but Clary knew him well enough to recognize the quick flash of hurt across his face, and the anxiety as he leaned forward to reply to Alec, just as Isabel and Simon burst into the room. Isabel looked flushed, but in the manner of someone who had been running rather than someone who had been giving into passion.
Poor Simon, Clary thought with amusement, amusement that vanished almost instantly when she saw the looks on their faces.
The east corridor ends in a door, Isabel said without preamble. A gate like the one we came through, but it's broken, and there are demons, the flying kind. They're not coming near here, but you can see them. Someone should probably keep watch, just to be safe.
I'll do it, Alec said, standing up. I'm not going to sleep anyway.
Me neither. Jace scrambled to his feet. Besides, someone should keep you company.
He looked at Clary, who offered an encouraging smile. She knew Jace hated it when Alec was angry at him,
She wasn't sure if he could feel the discord through the Parabato bond, or if it was just ordinary empathy, or a little of both.
"There are three moons," Isabel said, and sat down by the food, reaching for a granola bar. "And Simon thought he saw a city, a demon city."
"I wasn't sure," Simon added quickly.
"In the books, Edom has a capital, called Idumea," said Alec. "There could be something. We'll keep an eye out." He bent to retrieve his bow and started off down the east corridor. Jace retrieved a seraph blade, kissed Clary quickly, and headed after him. Clary settled down on her side, staring into the fire, letting the soft murmur of Isabel and Simon's conversation lull her to sleep.
Jace felt the sinews in his back and neck crack with exhaustion as he lowered himself down among the rocks, sliding back until he was sitting with his back to one of the larger ones, trying not to breathe too deeply in the bitter air. He heard Alec settle beside him, the rough material of his gear scratching against the ground. Moonlight sparked off his bow as he laid it across his lap and looked out over the landscape. The three moons hung low in the sky. Each fragment looked bloated and enormous, the color of wine, and they tinged the landscape with their bloody glow. "Are you going to talk?" Jace asked. "Or is this one of those times where you're mad at me, so you don't say anything?" "I'm not mad at you," Alec said. He ran a leather gauntleted hand over his bow, idly tapping his fingers against the wood. "I thought you might be," Jace said. "If I'd agreed to look for shelter, I wouldn't have been attacked. I put a soul in danger." Alec took a deep breath and let it out slowly. The moons had inched slightly higher in the sky, and they cast their dark glow across his face. He looked young, with his hair dirty and tangled, his shirt torn. "We knew the risks we were taking coming here with you. We signed up to die. I mean, obviously, I'd rather survive, but we all chose." "The first time you saw me," Jace said, looking down at his hands looped around his knees. "I bet you didn't think, he's going to get me killed. The first time I saw you, I wished you'd go back to Idris." Jace looked over at Alec incredulously. Alec shrugged. "You know I don't like change." "I grew on you, though," Jace stated confidently. "Eventually," Alec agreed. "Like moss, or a skin disease." "You love me." Jace leaned his head back against the rock, looking out across the dead landscape through tired eyes. "You think we should have left a note for Maris and Robert?" Alec laughed dryly. "I think they'll figure out where we went. Eventually. Maybe I don't care if Dad ever figures it out." Alec threw his head back and sighed. "Oh God, I'm a cliché," he said in despair. "Why do I care if Dad decides he hates me because I'm not straight? He's not worth the pain, right?" "Don't look at me," said Jace. "My adoptive father was a mass murderer, and I still worried about what he thought. It's what we're programmed to do. Your dad always seemed pretty great by comparison." "Sure, he likes you," said Alec. "You're heterosexual and have low expectations of father figures." "I think they'll probably put that on my gravestone. He was heterosexual and had low expectations." Alec smiled, a brief, forced flash of a smile. Jace looked at him narrowly. "Are you sure you're not mad? You seem kind of mad." Alec looked up at the sky overhead. There were no stars visible through the cloud cover, only a smear of yellowish black. "Not everything is about you." "If you're not doing okay, you should tell me," Jace said. "We're all under stress. We have to keep it together as much as we—" Alec whirled on him. There was disbelief in his eyes. "Doing okay? How would you be doing?" he demanded. "How would you be doing if it were Clary that Sebastian had taken? If it were her we were going to rescue, not knowing if she was dead or alive? How would you be doing?" Jace felt as if Alec had slapped him. He also felt as though he deserved it. It took him several tries before he could get out the next words.
I would be in pieces."
Alec got to his feet. He was outlined against the bruise-colored sky. the glow of the broken moons reflecting off the ground. Jace could see every facet of his expression, everything he had been keeping pent up. He thought of the way Alec had killed the fairy knight in the court, cold and quick and merciless. None of that was like Alec. And yet Jace had not paused to think about it, to think what drove that coldness, the hurt, the anger, the fear. "This," Alec said, gesturing toward himself. "This is me in pieces."
"Alec, I'm not like you," Alec said. I'm not able to create the perfect facade at all times. I can tell jokes. I can try, but there are limits. I can't."
Jace staggered to his feet.
"But you don't have to create a facade," he said, bewildered. "You don't have to pretend. I can break down. We both know that's not true. We need to hold it together. And all those years I watched you. I watched you hold it together. I watched you after you thought your father died. I watched you when you thought Clary was your sister. I watched you. And this is how you survived. So if I have to survive, then I'm going to do the same thing."
"But you're not like me," Jace said. He felt as if the steady ground below him were cracking in half. When he was 10 years old, he had built his life on the bedrock of the Lightwoods, Alec most of all. He had always thought that as Parabatai, they'd been there for each other, that he'd been there for Alec's broken heart as much as Alec had been there for his. But he realized now, and horribly, that he had given little thought to Alec since the prisoners had been taken, had not thought how each hour, each minute, must be for him, not knowing if Magnus was alive or dead. "You're better." Alec stared at him, his chest rising and falling quickly.
"What did you imagine?" he asked abruptly. "When we came through into this world. I saw your expression when we found you. You didn't envision nothing. Nothing wouldn't have made you look like that."
Jace shook his head.
"What did you see?"
"I saw the Hall of Accords. There was a huge victory banquet, and everyone was there. Max was there. And you. And Magnus. And everyone. And Dad was giving a speech about how I was the best warrior he'd ever known." His voice trailed off.
"I never thought I wanted to be the best warrior," he said. "I always thought I was happy being the dark star to your supernova. I mean, you have the angel's gift. I could train and train. I'd never be you."
"You'd never want to," Jace said. "That's not you."
Alec's breathing had slowed.
"I know," he said. "I'm not jealous. I always knew from the first that everyone thought you were better than me. My dad thought it. The Clave thought it. Izzy and Max looked up to you as the great warrior they wanted to be like. But the day you asked me to be your Parabatai, I knew you meant that you trusted me enough to ask me to help you. You were telling me you weren't the lone and self-sufficient warrior able to do everything alone. You needed me. So I realized there was one person who didn't assume you were better than me. You."
"There are all sorts of ways of being better," Jace said. "I knew that even then. I might be physically stronger, but you have the truest heart of anyone I've ever known, and the strongest faith in other people. And in that way, you are better than I could ever hope to be."
Alec looked at him with surprised eyes.
"The best thing Valentine ever did for me was send me to you," Jace added. "Your parents, sure, but mainly you. You and Izzy and Max. If it hadn't been for you, I would have been like Sebastian, wanting this."
He gestured at the wasteland in front of them.
"Wanting to be king of a wasteland of skulls and corpses."
Jace broke off, squinting into the distance.
"Did you see that?"
Alec shook his head.
"I don't see anything.
Light. Sparking off something." Jace searched among the shadows of the desert. He drew a seraph blade from his belt. Under the moonlight, even not yet activated, the clear adamas glowed with a ruby shine. "Wait here," he said,
Guard the entrance. I'm going to look. Jace, Alec started, but Jace was already darting down the slope, springing from rock to rock. As he neared the foot of the rise, the rocks became paler in color and began to crumble away under his feet as he landed on them. Eventually, they gave way to powdery sand, dotted with massive arched boulders. There were a few growing things dotting the landscape, trees that looked as if they'd been fossilized in place by a sudden blast, a solar flare. Behind him was Alec and the entrance to the tunnels. Ahead was desolation. Jace began to pick his way carefully among the broken rocks and trees. As he moved, he saw it again, a darting spark, something alive among the deadness. He turned toward it, placing each foot carefully, directly, in front of the other. "Who's there?" he called, then frowned. "Of course," he added, addressing the darkness all around. Even I, as a shadow hunter, have seen enough movies to know that anyone who yells "Who's there?" is going to be instantly killed. A noise echoed through the air. A gasp. A swallow of broken breath. Jace tensed and moved forward swiftly. There it was. A shadow, evolving out of the dark into a human shape. A woman, crouched and kneeling, wearing a pale robe stained with dirt and blood. She seemed to be weeping. Jace tightened his grip on the hilt of his blade. He had approached enough demons in his life, who were pretending helplessness, or who had otherwise disguised their true nature, that he felt less sympathy than suspicion. "Duma," he whispered, and the blade flared up into light. He could see the woman more clearly now. She had long hair that fell to the ground and mixed with the scorched earth, and a circle of iron around her brow. Her hair was reddish in the shadows, the color of old blood, and for a moment, before she rose and turned to him, he thought of the Seely Queen. But it was not her. This woman was a shadow hunter. She was more than that. She wore the white robes of an Iron Sister, bound under her breasts, and her eyes were the flat orange of flames. Dark runes disfigured her cheeks and brow. Her hands were clasped over her chest. She released them now and let them fall to her sides, and Jace felt the air in his lungs turn cold as he saw the massive wound in her chest, the blood spreading across the white fabric of her dress.
"You know me, don't you, Shadow Hunter?" she said. "I am Sister Magdalena of the Iron Sisters, whom you murdered."
Jace swallowed against his dry throat.
"It's not her. Your demon."
She shook her head.
"I was cursed for my betrayal of the Clave. When you killed me, I came here. This is my hell, and I wander it, never healing, always bleeding."
She pointed backward, and he saw the footsteps behind her that led to this place. The marks of bare feet, outlined in blood.
"This is what you did to me."
"It wasn't me," he said hoarsely. She cocked her head to the side.
"Wasn't it?" she said. "Do you not remember?" And he did remember. The small artist's studio in Paris. The Cup of Adamus.
Magdalena, not expecting the attack as he drew his blade and stabbed her. The look on her face as she fell against the work table, dying. Blood on his blade, on his hands, on his clothes. Not demon's blood or ichor. Not the blood of an enemy, the blood of a shadow hunter.
"You remember," said Magdalena, cocking her head to the side with a smile. "How would a demon know the things I know, Jace Herondale?"
"Not my name," Jace whispered. His blood felt hot in his veins, tightening his throat, choking off his words. He thought of the silver box with the birds on it, herons graceful in the air. The history of one of the great shadow hunter families, laid out in books and letters and heirlooms, and how he had felt as if he didn't deserve to touch the contents.
Her expression twitched, as if she didn't quite understand what he had said. But she went on smoothly, stepping toward him across the broken ground.
Then what are you? You have no real claim on the name of Lightwood. Are you a Morgenstern? Like Jonathan?
Jace took a breath that scorched his throat like fire. His body was slick with sweat, his hand shaking. Everything in him screamed that he should lunge forward, should pierce the Magdalena creature with his seraph blade. But he kept seeing her falling, dying, in Paris. And himself standing over her, realizing what he had done, that he was a murderer. And how could you murder the same person twice?
You liked it, didn't you? She whispered. Being bound to Jonathan, being one with him, it freed you. You can tell yourself now that everything you did was forced on you, that you weren't the one acting, that you didn't drive that blade into me. But we too know the truth. Lilith's bond was only an excuse for you to do the things you desired to do anyway. Clary, he thought achingly.
If she were here, he would have her inexplicable conviction to cling to, her belief that he was intrinsically good, a belief that served as a fortress through which no doubt could travel. But she was not here, and he was alone in a burned, dead land. The same dead land.
You saw it, didn't you? Magdalena hissed.
And she was almost on him now, her eyes leaping and flaring orange and red.
This burned land all destruction, and you ruling over it. That was your vision. The wish of your heart.
She caught at his wrist, and her voice rose, exultant, no longer quite human.
You think your dark secret is that you want to be like Jonathan. But I will tell you the true secret, the darkest secret. You already are.
No! Jace cried, and brought up his blade, an arc of fire across the sky. She jerked back, and for a moment Jace thought that the fire from the blade had caught the tip of her robe alight, for flame exploded across his vision. He felt the burn and twist of veins and muscles in his arms, heard Magdalena's scream turn guttural and inhuman. He staggered back, and realized the fire was pouring from him. That it had burst from his hands and fingertips in waves that coursed across the desert, blasting everything in front of him. He saw Magdalena twist and writhe, becoming something hideous, tentacled and repulsive, before shivering away to ashes with a scream. He saw the ground blacken and shimmer as he fell to his knees, his seraph blade melting into flames that rose to circle him. He thought,
I will burn to death here.
As the fire roared across the plain, blotting out the sky. He was not afraid.
17. Burnt Offerings. Clary dreamed of fire, a pillar of fire sweeping through a desert landscape, scorching everything in front of it. Trees, brush, shrieking people. Their bodies turned black as they crumbled away before the force of the flames. And over them all hung a rune, hovering like an angel, a shape like two wings joined by a single bar. A scream cut through the smoke and shadow, snapping Clary out of her nightmares. Her eyes flew open and she saw fire in front of her, bright and hot, and scrambled up, reaching for Hierosphorus. With the blade in her hand, her heartbeat ebbed slowly. This fire wasn't raging or out of control, it was contained. The smoke floating up toward the enormous roof of the cave. It illuminated the space around it. She could see Simon and Isabel in the glow, Izzy lifting herself out of Simon's lap and blinking around, confused. What? Clary was already on her feet. Someone screamed, she said. You two stay here, I'll go see what happened. No, no! Isabel scrambled to her feet just as Alec burst into the chamber, panting hard. Jace, he said. Something's happened. Clary, get your steely and come on. He turned around and darted back into the tunnel. Clary jammed Hierosphorus through her belt and raced after him. She rocketed through the corridor, boots skimming over the uneven rocks and exploded out into the night, her steely now in her hand.
The night was burning. The grey plateau of rocks tilted down toward the desert, and where the rocks met the sand, there was fire. Fire blasting up into the air, turning the sky gold, scorching the ground. She stared at Alec. "Where is Jace?" she shouted over the crackle of the flames. He looked away from her at the heart of the fire. "There," he said. "Inside it, I saw it pour out of him and swallow him up." Clary felt her heart seize up. She staggered back away from Alec as if he'd hit her. And then he was reaching for her, saying, "Clary, he's not dead. If he were, I'd know it. I'd know." Isabel and Simon burst out from the cave entrance behind them. Clary saw them both react to the heavenly fire, Isabel with widened eyes and Simon with a recoil of horror. Fire and vampires didn't mix, even if he was a daylighter. Isabel caught at his arm as if to protect him. Clary could hear her shouting, her words lost against the roar of flames. Clary's arm burned and stung. She looked down to realize that she had been drawing on her skin, the reflex taking over from her conscious mind. She watched as a pyre rune for fireproofing appeared on her wrist, bold and black against her skin. It was a strong rune. She could feel the force of it radiating outward. She started down the slope, turning when she sensed Alec behind her. "Stay back," she shouted at him and held up her wrist, showing him the rune. "I don't know if it'll work," she called. "Stay here. Protect Simon and Izzy. The heavenly fire should keep the demons back, but just in case." And then she turned away, darting lightly among the rocks, closing the distance between herself and the blaze as Alec stood on the path behind her, hands fisted at his sides. Up close, the fire was a wall of gold, moving and shifting, colors flickering in its heart, burning red, tongues of orange and green. Clary could see nothing but flames. The heat that poured off the blaze made her skin prickle and her eyes water. She took a breath that scorched her throat and stepped into the fire. It wrapped her like an embrace. The world turned red, gold, orange, and swam before her eyes. Her hair lifted and blew in the hot wind, and she couldn't tell what was its fiery strands and what was fire itself. She stepped forward carefully, staggering as if she were walking against a massive headwind. She could feel the fireproof rune throbbing on her arm with each step, as the flames swirled up around and over her. She took another scorching breath and pushed forward, her shoulders bent as if she were lifting a heavy weight. There was nothing around her but fire. She would die in the fire, she thought, burning up like a feather, not even a footprint left on the dirt of this alien world to mark that she had ever been there. "Jace," she thought, and took a final step. The flames parted around her like a curtain drawing back, and she gasped, falling forward, her knees hitting the earth hard. The fireproof rune on her arm was fading, turning white, draining her energy along with its power. She lifted her head and stared. The fire rose all around her in a circle, flames reaching for the scorched demon sky. In the center of the circle of flame knelt Jace. He was untouched by fire himself, on his knees, his golden head back, his eyes half closed. His hands were flat on the ground, and from his palms poured a river of what looked like molten gold. It had threaded through the earth like tiny streams of lava illuminating the ground. No, she thought, it was doing more than illuminating it. It was crystallizing the earth, turning it to a hard golden material that shone like adamas. She crawled forward toward Jace, the ground under her turning from bumpy earth to a slippery glassine substance, like adamas, but the color of gold instead of white. Jace didn't move. Like the angel Raziel rising from Lake Lynn's streaming water, he remained still as fire poured from him, and all around the ground hardened and turned to gold. Adamas. The power of it shuddered up and through Clary, making her bones shiver. Images bloomed in her mind, runes looming up and then vanishing like fireworks, and she mourned their loss, so many runes she would never know the meaning of, the use of. But then she was inches from Jace, and the first rune she had ever imagined, the rune she had spent the last days dreaming of, rose up in her mind. Wings connected by a single bar. No, not wings. The hilt of a sword. It had always been the hilt of a sword. "Jace!" she cried, and his eyes flew open. They were more golden than even the fire. He looked at her in utter disbelief, and she realized immediately what he had thought he was doing. Kneeling and waiting to die, waiting to be consumed by the fire like a medieval saint.
She wanted to slap him. Clary, how? She reached to catch at his wrist, but he was faster than she was and dodged her grip. No, don't touch me. It isn't safe. Jace, stop. She held up her arm with the pyre rune on it, shimmering silver in the unearthly glow. I walked through the fire to get to you, she said over the cry of the flames. We're here. We're both here now, understand? His eyes were manic, desperate. Clary, get out. No. She clutched at his shoulders, and this time he didn't move back. She fisted her hands in his gear. I know how to fix this, she cried, and leaned forward to press her lips to his. His mouth was hot and dry, his skin burning as she ran her hands up his neck to cut the sides of his face. She tasted fire and char and blood on his mouth and wondered if he tasted the same thing on her. Trust me, she whispered against his lips. And though the words were swallowed up by the chaos around them, she felt him relax minutely and nod, leaning into her, letting the fire pass between them as they breathed each other's breath, tasting the sparks on each other's lips. Trust me, she whispered again and reached for her blade. Isabel had her arms around Simon, holding him back. She knew that if she let him go, he would tear down the slope to the fire where Clary had disappeared and throw himself into it. And he would go up like tinder, like gasoline-soaked tinder. He was a vampire. Isabel held him, her hands clasped around his chest, and felt as if she could sense the hollowness under his ribs, the place where his heart didn't beat. Her own was racing. Her hair lifted and blew back in the hot wind from the immense fire burning at the foot of the plateau. Alec was halfway down the path, hovering. He was a black silhouette against the flames. And the flames, they leaped toward the sky, blotting out the broken moon, shifting and changing a deadly, beautiful wall of gold. As the flames trembled, Isabel could make out shadows moving inside them. The shadow of someone kneeling, and then another, smaller shadow bending and crawling. Clary, she thought, crawling toward Jace through the heart of the conflagration. She knew Clary had put a pyre rune on her arm, but Isabel had never heard of a fireproof rune that could withstand this kind of blaze. Is, Simon whispered. I don't... Shh. She held him tighter, held him as if holding him would keep her from shattering apart herself. Jace was in there, in the heart of the fire, and she couldn't lose another brother, she couldn't. They're all right, she said. If Jace were hurt, Alec would know, and if he's all right, then Clary's all right. They'll burn to death, Simon said, sounding lost. Isabel cried out as the flames leaped suddenly higher. Alec took a halting step forward and then fell to his knees, put his hands in the dirt. The curve of his back was a bow of pain. The sky was whirls of fire, spinning and dizzying. Isabel released Simon and bolted down the path to her brother. She bent over him, knotting her hands in the back of his jacket, hauling him upright. Alec! Alec! Alec staggered to his feet, his face dead white, except where it was smeared black with soot. He spun, turning his back to Isabel, shrugging down his gear jacket. My Parabatai rune, can you see it? Isabel felt her stomach drop. She thought for a moment she might faint. She grabbed at Alec's collar, pulled it down, and exhaled a hard breath of relief. It's still there. Alec shrugged his jacket back on. I felt something change. It was like something in me twisted. His voice rose. I'm going down there. No! Isabel caught at his arm, and then Simon said sharply from beside her, Look. He was pointing toward the fire. Isabel gazed at it uncomprehendingly for a moment before realizing what he was indicating. The flames had begun to die down. She shook her head as if to clear it, her hand still on Alec's arm, but it wasn't an illusion. The fire was fading. The flame shrank down from towering orange pillars, fading to yellow, curling inward like fingers. She let go of Alec and the three of them stood in a line, shoulder to shoulder, as the fire dwindled, revealing a circle of slightly darkened earth where the flames had burned, and inside it, two figures, Clary and Jace. Both were hard to see through the smoke and the red glow of still-burning embers, but it was clear they were alive and unharmed. Clary was standing, Jace kneeling in front of her, his hands in hers,
almost as if he were being knighted.
There was something ritualistic about the position, something that spoke of a strange old magic. As the smoke cleared, Isabel could see the bright glint of Jace's hair as he rose to his feet. They both began walking up the path. Isabel, Simon, and Alec broke formation and hurtled toward them. Isabel threw herself at Jace, who caught her and hugged her, reaching past her to clasp Alec's hand, even as he held Isabel tightly. His skin was cool against hers, almost cold. His gear was without a single scorch or burn mark, just as the desert earth behind them showed no trace that moments ago a massive conflagration had burned there. Isabel turned her head against Jace's chest and saw Simon hugging Clary. He was holding her tightly, shaking his head, and as Clary turned a radiant smile up to him, Isabel realized she didn't feel a single spark of jealousy. There was nothing different about the way Simon was hugging Clary from the way she was hugging Jace. There was love there, plain and clear, but it was a sisterly love. She broke apart from Jace and flashed a smile at Clary, who smiled shyly back. Alec moved to hug Clary, and Simon and Jace eyed each other warily. Suddenly, Simon grinned, that sudden, unexpected grin that flashed out even in the worst of circumstances, and which Isabel loved, and held his arms out toward Jace. Jace shook his head.
I don't care if I did just set myself on fire, he said. I'm not hugging you.
Simon sighed and dropped his arms.
Your loss, he said. If you'd gone in, I would have let you, but honestly, it would have been a pity hug.
Jace turned to Clary, who was no longer embracing Alec, but standing looking amused with her hand on the hilt of Heosphorus. It seemed to shimmer, as if it had caught some of the light of the fire.
Did you hear that? Jace demanded, a pity hug.
Alec held a hand up. Rather surprisingly, Jace fell silent. I recognize that we're all filled with the giddy joy of survival, thus explaining your current stupid behavior, Alec said. But first, he raised a finger. I think the three of us are entitled to an explanation. What happened? How did you lose control of the fire? Were you attacked?
It was a demon, Jace said after a pause. It took the form of a woman of someone I hurt when Sebastian possessed me. It goaded me until I lost command over the heavenly fire. Clary helped me get it back under control.
And that's it? You're both okay? Isabel said, half disbelieving. When I saw what was going on, I thought it was Sebastian. That he'd come for us somehow. That you'd tried to burn him and that you'd burned yourself up.
That won't happen.
Jace touched Izzy's face gently.
I have the fire under control now. I know how to use it and how not to use it, how to direct it.
How? Alec said, amazed. Jace hesitated. His eyes flicked towards Clary and seemed to grow darker, as if a shutter had come down over them.
You're just going to have to trust me.
That's it? Simon said in disbelief.
Just trust you?
Don't you? Jace asked. Simon looked at Isabel, who glanced at her brother. After a moment, Alec nodded. We trusted you enough to come here, he said. We'll trust you to the end. Although it would be really awesome if you told us the plan, you know, a little before it, said Isabel. Before the end, I mean. Alec raised an eyebrow at her. She shrugged innocently. Just a little before, she said. I like to have some preparation. Her brother's eyes met hers, and then, a little hoarsely, almost as if he'd forgotten how to do it, he started to laugh.
To the Council. The fair folk are not your allies, they are your enemies. They hate the Nephilim and plan to betray them and bring them down. They have cooperated with Sebastian Morgenstern in attacking and destroying institutes. Do not trust Meliorn or any other advisors from any court. The Seelie Queen is your enemy. Do not try and respond to this message. I ride with the Wild Hunt now, and they will kill me if they think I have told you anything. Mark Blackthorn.
Gia Penhallow looked over her reading glasses at Emma and Julian, who stood nervously in front of the desk in the library of her house. A large picture window opened behind the console, and Emma could see the view of Alicante spread out. Houses spilling down the hills, canals running towards the Accords Hall, Guard Hill rising against the sky.
Gia glanced down again at the paper they had brought her. It had been folded up with almost diabolical cleverness inside the acorn, and it had taken ages and Ty's skilled fingers to get it extricated. Did your brother write anything else besides this? A private message to you?
No, Julian said, and there must have been something in the wounded tightness of his voice that made Gia believe him, because she didn't pursue it.
You realize what this means, she said. The council will not want to believe it. They will say it's a trick.
It's Mark's handwriting, said Julian, and the way he signed it. He pointed to the mark at the bottom of the page, a clear print of thorns made in what looked like red-brown ink.
He rolled his family ring in blood and used it to make that, Julian said, his face flushed. He showed me how to do it once. No one else would have the Blackthorn family ring, or know to do that with it.
Gia looked from Julian's clenched fists to Emma's set face and nodded.
Are you all right? She said more gently. Do you know what the Wild Hunt is?
Ty had lectured them rather extensively on it, but Emma found that now, with the consul's compassionate dark gaze on her, she couldn't find words. It was Julian who spoke.
Fairies that are huntsmen, he said. They ride across the sky. People think that if you follow them, they can lead you to the land of the dead. Or to fairy.
Gwyn Ap Nudth leads them, said Gia. He has no allegiance. He is part of a wilder magic. He is called the Gatherer of the Dead. Though he is a fairy, he and his huntsmen are not involved with the Accords. They have no agreement with Shadowhunters and do not recognize our jurisdiction, and they will not abide by laws, any laws, do you understand?
They looked at her blankly. She sighed.
If Gwyn has taken your brother to be one of his hunters, it might be impossible.
You're saying you won't be able to get him back? Emma said and saw something in Julian's eyes shatter.
The sight made her want to leap over the desk and clobber the consul with her stack of neatly labeled files, each with a different name on it.
One leaped out at Emma, like a sign lit up in neon. Carstairs. Deceased.
She tried not to let the recognition of her family name show on her face.
I'm saying I don't know. The consul spread her hands flat over the surface of the desk. There's so much we don't know right now, she said, and her voice sounded quiet and nearly broken. To lose the Fairfolk as allies is a severe blow. Of all downworlders, they are the subtlest enemies and the most dangerous. She rose to her feet. Wait here for a moment. She left the room through a door in the paneling, and after a few moments of silence, Emma heard the sound of feet and the murmur of Patrick's voice. She caught individual words, trial and mortal and betrayal. She could sense Julian beside her, wound as tightly as a spring-loaded crossbow. She reached out to touch her hand lightly to his back and drew between his shoulder blades with her finger. A-R-E-Y-O-U-A-L-L-R-I-G-H-T. He shook his head without looking at her. Emma glanced towards the stack of files on the desk, then toward the door, then at Julian, silent and expressionless, and decided. She launched herself at the desk, plunging her hand into the stack of files and pulled out the one labeled Carstairs. It was a bound file, not heavy, and Emma reached out to yank up Julian's shirt. She muffled his cry of surprise with a hand over his mouth, and used the other hand to stuff the file into the back of his jeans. She pulled his shirt down over it just as the door opened and Gia walked back in.
Would you two be willing to testify before the council one last time? She asked, gazing from Emma, who guessed she was probably flushed, to Julian, who looked as if he had been electrified.
His gaze hardened, and Emma marveled. Julian was so gentle, she sometimes forgot that those sea-colored eyes could turn as cold as the waves off the coast in winter.
No mortal sword, the consul said. I just want you to tell them what you know.
If you promise, you'll try to get Mark back, said Julian. And you won't just say it, you'll actually do it.
Gia looked at him solemnly.
I promise that the Nephilim will not abandon Mark Blackthorn, not as long as he lives.
Julian's shoulders relaxed just a fraction.
Okay then.
It bloomed like a flower against the clouded black sky. A sudden, silent explosion of flame. Luke, standing by the window, flinched back in surprise before pressing himself against the narrow opening.
trying to identify the source of the radiance. What is it? Raphael looked up from where he was kneeling by Magnus. Magnus appeared to be asleep. His eyes shadowed dark crescents against his skin. He had curled himself uncomfortably around the chains that held him, and looked ill, or at least exhausted. I'm not sure, Luke said, and held himself still as the vampire boy came to join him at the window. He had never felt entirely comfortable around Raphael. Raphael seemed to him like Loki, or some other trickster god, sometimes working for good and sometimes for evil, but always in his own interests. Raphael muttered something in Spanish and pushed past Luke. The flames reflected in the pupils of his dark eyes, red gold. Sebastian's work, do you think? Luke asked. No. Raphael's gaze was distant, and Luke was reminded that the boy in front of him, though he looked an ageless, angelic 14, was in fact older than he was, older than Luke's parents would have been if they had lived, or, in his mother's case, if she had remained mortal. There is something holy about this fire. Sebastian's work is demon's work. This is like the way God appeared to the wanderers in the desert. By day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Luke raised an eyebrow at him. Raphael shrugged. I was brought up a good Catholic boy. He cocked his head to the side. I think our friend Sebastian will not like this very much, whatever it is. Can you see anything else? Luke demanded. Vampire vision was more powerful even than a werewolf's enhanced sight. Something. Ruins, perhaps, like a dead city. Raphael shook his head in frustration. Look where the fire fades. It is dying away. There was a soft murmur from the floor, and Luke glanced down. Magnus had rolled onto his back. His chains were long, giving him at least enough freedom of movement to curl his hands over his stomach, as if in pain. His eyes were open. Speaking of fading, Raphael returned to his place by Magnus's side. You must tell us, Warlock, he said, if there is something that we can do for you. I have not seen you so sick. Raphael. Magnus pushed a hand through his sweaty black hair. His chain rattled. It's my father, he said abruptly. This is his realm. Well, one of them. Your father? He's a demon, Magnus said shortly, which shouldn't be a huge surprise. Don't expect any more information than that. Fine. But why would being in your father's realm make you sick? He's trying to get me to call on him, said Magnus, propping himself on his elbows. He can reach me here easily. I can't do magic in this realm, so I can't protect myself. He can make me sick or make me well. He's making me sick because he thinks if I get desperate enough, I'll call on him for help. Will you? Asked Luke. Magnus shook his head and winced. No. It wouldn't be worth the price. There's always a price with my father. Luke felt himself tense. He and Magnus weren't close, but he had always liked the warlock, respected him, respected Magnus and warlocks such as Katarina Loss and Ragnar Fell and the others, those who had worked with Shadowhunters for generations. He didn't like the sound of despair in Magnus's voice now, or the echoing look in his eyes. Wouldn't you pay it? If the choice were your life. Magnus looked at Luke wearily, and flopped back against the stone floor. I might not be the one who pays it, he said, and shut his eyes. Luke began, but Raphael shook his head at him, a scolding gesture. He had hunched up by Magnus's shoulder, his hands looped around his knees. Dark veins were visible at his temples and throat, signs that it had been too long since he had fed. Luke could only imagine the odd picture they made. The starving vampire, the dying warlock, and the werewolf keeping watch at the window. You know nothing of his father, said Raphael in a low voice. Magnus was still, clearly asleep again, his breathing labored. "And I suppose you know who Magnus's father is," Luke said. "I paid a lot of money once to find it out." "Why? What good would the knowledge do you?" "I like to know things," Raphael said. "It can be useful." "He knew my mother. It only seemed fair I knew his father." "Magnus saved my life once," added Raphael in an emotionless voice. "When I first became a vampire, I wanted to die. I thought I was a damned thing. He stopped me from throwing myself into the sunlight. Magnus showed me how to walk on holy ground, how to say the name of God, how to wear a cross. It wasn't magic he gave me, just patience. But it saved my life all the same." "So you owe him," said Luke. Raphael shrugged off his jacket and, in a single swift move, pushed it beneath Magnus's head. Magnus stirred but didn't wake. "You think about it however you would like to," he said. "I will not give up his secrets." "Answer me one thing," Luke said, the stone wall cold against his back. "Is Magnus's father someone who could help us?" Raphael laughed, a short, sharp bark without any real amusement to it. "You are very funny, werewolf," he said. "Go back to your watching at the window. And if you are the sort who prays, then perhaps you should pray that Magnus's father does not decide he wants to help us. If you trust me as regards nothing else, trust me about that, at least."
"Did you just eat 3 pizzas?" Lily was staring at Bat with a mixture of distaste and amazement.
4, said Bat, placing a now empty Joe's pizza box on the top of a stack of other boxes and smiling serenely. Maya felt a rush of affection for him. She hadn't let him in on her plan for the meeting with Maureen, and he hadn't complained once, just complimented her on her poker face. He'd agreed to sit down with her and Lily to discuss the alliance, even though she knew he didn't much like vampires. And he'd saved for her the pizza that had only cheese on it, since he knew she didn't like toppings. She was on her 4th slice. Lily, perched daintily on the edge of the desk in the police station lobby, was smoking a long cigarette, Maya guessed lung cancer wasn't that big a worry when you were dead already, and eyeing the pizza suspiciously. Maya didn't care how much Bat ate. Something had to fuel all those muscles, as long as he seemed happy to keep her company during the meeting. Lily had stuck to their agreement about Maureen, but she still gave Maya the shivers.
"You know," Lily said, swinging her booted feet, "I must say I was expecting something a bit more exciting, less of a phone bank." She wrinkled her nose.
Maya sighed and looked around. The lobby of the police station was full of werewolves and vampires, probably for the first time since it had been built. There were stacks of papers listing what contact information for important downwelders they'd managed to beg, borrow, steal, and dig up. It had turned out the vampires had pretty impressive records of who was in charge where, and everyone was on cell phones or computers, calling and texting and emailing the heads of clans and packs and every warlock they could track down.
"Thank goodness the fairies are centralized," said Bat. "One Seelie Court, one Unseelie Court."
Lily smirked.
"The land under the hill stretches far and wide," she said. "The courts are all we can reach in this world, that's all."
"Well, this world is what we're concerned with at the moment," said Maya, stretching and rubbing the back of her neck. She'd been calling and emailing and writing messages all day herself, and she was exhausted. Vampires had joined them only at nightfall and were expected to work through till morning while the werewolves slept.
"You realize what Sebastian Morgenstern will do to us if his side wins," said Lily, looking thoughtfully around the crowded room. "I doubt he has much forgiveness for anyone who works against him."
"Maybe he'll kill us first," said Maya. "But he would kill us anyway. I know you vampires love the idea of reason and logic and clever, careful alliances, but that's not how he works. He wants to burn the world down. That's all he wants." Lily exhaled smoke.
"Well," she said, "that would be inconvenient, considering how we feel about fire."
"You're not having second thoughts, are you?" Maya said, trying hard to keep the worry from her voice. "You seemed very sure we should stand against Sebastian when we talked before."
"We walk a very dangerous line, that is all," said Lily.
Have you ever heard the expression, when the cat is away, the mice will play?
Of course.